This fall, we are looking at what the Bible and Jesus' example can teach us about how we relate with one another and especially about how we communicate with one another. And so our series is called Christ-like Communication. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the importance of speaking the truth in love, and that each part of that, speaking the truth and speaking in love, each individual one is difficult enough on its own. But trying to do both of those at the same time can really present some challenges. And yet that is what we are called to do and who we are called to be as people of faith. And so this week we turn to what is inevitable when we have conflict with one another and the ways that we might relate to one another and communicate with each other in the middle of that. Jesus provides us some important teaching specifically about this topic. But before we get to that, I think there are two underlying assumptions or foundations that are part of this scripture passage that are worth highlighting. The first is that we are part of community together. And Jesus talks about that in the passage. The phrase in the passage is when a member of the church sins against you. Now the actual Greek word there is adelphos. That's what's translated as member of the church. And that literally means brother. And so the literal translation is when a brother sins against you. And so what the point that Jesus is trying to get across is that when we are in community together, when we are part of a church together, we are brothers and sisters. We are family. And one of the things about family is that we are committed to one another. We don't walk out on family just because there's a conflict, just because things might get hard or difficult or hurtful. We are committed to one another because we are part of the family of God together. Jesus also promises that when two or three are gathered in his name, that he is present. He is there among them. And he doesn't add any qualifiers to that. Jesus doesn't say, when two or three are gathered in my name and things are going great and they're getting along, that's when I'm there. No. Jesus says, I'm there when two or three are together. And so that means even in the middle of times of conflict and hardship and hurting one another, Jesus is there with us. So this idea of Christ's presence and our community together is one of the foundations when we talk about how to deal with conflict with one another. The second foundation, this kind of ends the passage and what Carrie spent most of the children's message on, is forgiveness. Now in Jesus' day, there was a debate among the rabbis about forgiveness. And the question was, how many times are you supposed to forgive someone? Some rabbis said one time that, you know, the commandment says forgive, and then once you do that, you can check that off the list. You don't have to do it again. Other rabbis said, no, two times are good, three times are good. And so Peter comes to Jesus and says, well, how many times should I forgive? Seven times? Because that's over the top. That's an extravagant number. It's not one, not two, not three. Seven times. Peter thinks he is hot stuff right now. That he would forgive seven times when most of the rabbis say just one or two or three. But Jesus blows that answer out of the water. Not seven times, 77 times. Some translations say 70 times seven. Jesus' point is that it's a number that is too high for you to count. And if you're counting how many times you forgive somebody, you're missing the point of forgiveness anyway. That forgiveness should be done extravagantly and generously and broadly and widely. As part of a community of faith together, as part of people in relationship with one another, conflict is going to happen. We are going to hurt one another. It's inevitable. But this idea of forgiveness underlies the whole thing. Just as Carrie said, when someone asks for forgiveness, it's our responsibility, our obligation, our calling to offer that forgiveness back, to actually forgive one another. And so these two ideas of community and God's presence with us and forgiveness underlying the whole thing are part of the context when we think about what to do when there is conflict. And so let's turn to this idea of conflict itself. Now again, conflict is inevitable when two people are in relationship and friendship and community together. It is unavoidable. We think about all the different conflicts that we see in the Bible. In the very first family in the Bible, Adam and Eve have two sons, Cain and Abel, and what do? They get into a conflict about worship and sacrifice, and Cain kills Abel. Not a good way to handle conflict, right? Okay. But conflict is baked into the human story from the very beginning. Think about Abraham and Lot, and they travel together, and then they come to the promised land, and the people who are with them, they can't get along. The sheep are intermingling and all this stuff, and they don't like it, and so they go separate ways, and they settle in separate parts of the land. There's conflict, even in the story of Abraham, the great father of faith. Conflict is throughout the Bible. Oh, Jacob and Esau, talk about conflict, right? The twins who are fighting even in their mother's womb. One sticks his arm out of the womb first so that he can be the firstborn child. And then they struggle for the rest of their lives. Eventually, Jacob steals the birthright from Esau, right? Conflict is part of the human condition. Not even Jesus, the perfect Son of God, is immune from conflict. He gets into conflict with the disciples, especially the Pharisees. Remember when he goes in the temple and he chases the people out? Conflict. Jesus is crucified, right? Talk about conflict. Even Jesus has conflicts with other people. And so conflict is simply unavoidable. And so, when we get into conflict with someone, I think our natural response, our natural feeling about that conflict is fear, right? If I get into an argument with somebody, if there's a conflict between me and somebody else, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that it might hurt our friendship. I'm afraid that I might hurt them or that I might be hurt. If I'm honest, personally, I'm afraid I'll be proven wrong because I like to be right. I'm afraid of a lot of things that might happen between me and that person. That people might judge us, or that, you know, people might gang up, or whatever. There's a lot of fear involved when there is conflict. And as human beings, we have two natural responses to fear. Fight and flight. Right? That's kind of basic psychology. Most of us have heard that. Fight and flight. What?
And freeze.
And freeze, yes. I'm not going to talk about freeze, though. I'm just going to focus on fight and flight. I couldn't come up with a thing for freeze, so sorry. So fight and flight, right? Freeze is one too. If you don't know what to do, then yeah, whatever. That doesn't really hurt anybody in this thing. But fight and flight, right? So one instinct when we have conflict and there's fear is to fight. When I was in college, I was a member of a fraternity. And one of my fraternity brothers started dating a young woman who had previously dated somebody in another fraternity. And the guy in the other fraternity got really upset that my fraternity brother was dating this young woman named Erica. And so some other folks at the other fraternity, they kind of got together and they were talking about it and they were getting angry and they were drinking and they kind of whipped up into a frenzy. And so a group of them marched over from their fraternity house to my fraternity house. Now, I happened to be sitting outside and like checking people in because we were having a party. And so I was the first person that they saw when they walked up, right? And they just start throwing punches. I got punched in the face. Me, punched in the face, right? I go down, they start kicking me, and then, eventually everything breaks up, right? Our instinct, sometimes when there is conflict, is to lash out and to fight, right? Now, that's a pretty extreme example, right? Most of us are not going to go actually physically fight somebody. But often, when there's conflict, we are aggressive towards the other person. We do try to use our words or our actions to overpower them, right? And I think that is not a good or healthy response to conflict. The second natural reaction that we might have is flight, to run away. In animal instincts, that's often helpful to get out of a dangerous situation, but not so much when it comes to conflict. How that typically plays itself out is avoiding conflict, right? Personally, I hate conflict. It is no fun to deal with. It is so uncomfortable, and there's a lot of fear bound up in it. And so my instinct is not to fight. Mine is to flight. Mine is to run away and to avoid. Let me get real with y'all for a minute. That's a lot of what happened in my marriage that fell apart. There was conflict that built up over time and over time, and I learned to avoid it because it wasn't fun dealing with the conflict. It was hard. And so eventually I just stopped, and I tried to pretend like everything was okay when it wasn't. As we went through couples counseling, the image that the therapist used was there was this mountain of resentment that had built up. Because we each had things that we had conflict and we didn't deal with it. And so we took it on the inside, and it just built up and built up and built up to the point that it was pretty much insurmountable. That often has been my response to conflict. To pretend like it's not there, to avoid it, to let it fester and grow inside of me rather than dealing with it. And friends, it did not work. It did not. So I don't think fight or flight are really good options. But the good news is that there is a third option, and it's not freeze. The third option is what Jesus tells us about. The third option is to deal with conflict in a mature and upfront way. So Jesus kind of lays it out for us. He says that when there is a conflict, go to the other person directly and talk to that person about it. That sounds so simple, right? But so often we fail to do that, right? So often we talk to somebody else about it. We bring somebody who's not part of the equation into the conversation. Or we gang up on the person. We might get some other people to come and talk about it. Or we might come out sideways, right? Kind of a passive-aggressive kind of behavior. But Jesus says, go to the person directly and talk to them. Share what is going on. So part of that is noticing what's happening in you, right? If somebody does something and it hurts you, or you get angry about it, or it causes you guilt or shame, to notice that and then to name that with the other person. And that takes some maturity. It takes some learning to know how to do that. But that's exactly what Jesus tells us to do. Oftentimes, I found that the person doesn't even know what they've done has hurt you. Right? They're just kind of oblivious. They didn't do it intentionally, and yet their action was hurtful. And so, at least me personally, I'm so grateful when someone comes to me and says, this thing that you said, this thing that you did, it hurt me or it offended me, so that I can apologize or so that we can talk about it and try to make it right. Let me give you an example from my own life. One of the hardest things I've ever had to do in ministry was in my very first appointment. I was associate at Christ United Methodist Church up in Louisville, Kentucky. It was a large church. They averaged over 1,000 people in worship on Sunday morning. And they had a contemporary service on Saturday evening that they'd started probably 4 or 5 years before I got there. And when they started the service, it was a success at first. There were lots of people coming, probably over 100, and it was filling a need. But by the time that I was appointed there, it had shrunk down. And there were maybe 20 or 25 people who came to the service. And yet a big part of my time was planning the service and writing a sermon for it. We had 2 other staff people who were just devoted to that service. We were pouring a lot of time and energy into that service. And it was draining. Because for whatever reason, that service really just attracted the folks who didn't fit in on Sunday morning. And it was important for them to have a place that was part of the church, but that was a little bit different. But we were pouring all these resources into it, and it wasn't a healthy environment, that worship service wasn't. And so we came to the really hard decision that we needed to end that worship service. And there were a handful of folks who were super committed to that service and who found a great deal of meaning in it, and it hurt them when we ended that service. It was painful for them. And I'll never forget some of them coming into my office and sharing that with me. Otherwise, I don't think I would have known just the depth of how much that service and that community meant to them. I'm grateful that they came directly to me and talked to me about it rather than just talking to other people or complaining about it or whatever it might have been. And so we worked hard to help them find other places in the church to connect and to find community. But I've always been grateful that they came to me and talked to me about it. I think they were following exactly what Jesus taught to do. When there's a conflict, when you've been hurt, go to the other person directly. Another example, and I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, but I have been impressed with the young staff members that we have here at Blakemore. In particular, I think of Matthew and Julia, who has now left us, and the ways that they advocate for themselves. I'm not good at that. I avoid conflict, right? That's my default. And they're not aggressive about it, but they don't avoid it either. They're willing to step into that uncomfortable space and to advocate for themselves for boundaries that they need or whatever it might be. And I've been really impressed with Matthew and Julia in particular and their ability to do that, to step forward into that uncomfortableness in a mature kind of way. And so in the end, we have community, God's presence that surrounds us and supports us whenever there is conflict. In the end, we are invited to offer forgiveness to one another and to ask that from each other. And we are called that when we are hurt, when there is conflict, to go directly to the other person and talk to them. I would add, I think most of the time it's important to do that in person. We're tempted by technology to send a text message or even a phone call or whatever it might be, and sometimes that's what we need to do. But most of the time, if it's possible, in person, face to face, is the best way to go. Because you can read one another's faces and body language and get tone and all those things that you might miss when you communicate electronically. And then if that doesn't work, if you come to the other person directly and there's not a resolution, Jesus offers an alternative. Bring somebody else into the picture. But somebody who's neutral, right? Jesus' idea is not that you get people on your side and you gang up on the other person. Nobody's going to respond well to that. Right? The idea is to bring in a neutral third party. Me, as a pastor, a therapist or a counselor, a friend who's mutual, who can kind of separate feelings from whatever it might be, that they might help you navigate those waters and be a witness to whatever goes on. In the very end, I'm reminded of God's great love for us. That God loves each and every one of us so much that God would come to us directly in the form of Jesus Christ. May we love one another enough to come to each other directly in conflict. Amen.